proceed to the fifth case, Shadde v. Omni Hotels. Mr. Record.
Good afternoon. My name is James Record II.
We're still in the morning.
Oh, yes, we are.
It may just seem to you that you've been here that long.
Thank you, Judge. I represent Miranda Shadde in her appeal where she's seeking reversal of an adverse ruling of summary judgment for Defendant Omni, holding that under the applicable District of Columbia case law that Omni's not liable in negligence for the third-party criminal assault upon Shadde that occurred while she was a guest at the Omni Shoreham in Washington, D.C., and it's the basis of her lawsuit.
What I find troublesome about your case, two things. First, at a hotel like that, the concern is with perimeter security. Guests of expensive hotels attacking each other, really unusual. Now I'm frightened, of course, after reading your case, but it's very rare. The assault against her was not a breach of perimeter security. Even if their perimeter security was bad, nevertheless, that had nothing to do with that. That's not what she's complaining of. It's not an outsider. It's a fellow guest. And I didn't see in your brief any indication of what kind of standards have evolved, norms regarding what kind of security you need to prevent guests from attacking each other.
Judge Bozer,
would juries just be, wandering around saying, "Oh yeah, should have been another camera, should have been six more guards or something"? What would they do? I don't understand. How would they balance the security concerns against the expense to the hotel of having a very elaborate measures to protect guests from each other, which is the odd thing?
Well, Judge, obviously, the plaintiff would say that we would rely on the expert opinion testimony of our security expert, Fred Del Mar.
You can always get an expert. And the expert's going to say, "Oh yeah, a hotel should be built like a fortress. It should have metal detectors and so on. It should have cameras in the elevators, cameras in the rooms." There's no end to
probably find an expert to say they shouldn't too. So it works out both ways. So.
Right.
Thank you, Judge. We believe that the district court didn't give sufficient weight to the facts in the record in opposition to summary judgment, and that
what didn't he take into consideration?
Well, Judge, on page 13 of his opinion, which I believe is 19 of the appendix, or no, excuse me, is 20 of the appendix. He specifically states that he's taking the testimony of Del Mar as true, as he should, in summary judgment, but then seems to give little weight to the surrounding crime environs.
Well, but that is really silly. Speaking of someone, I know the Shoreham Hotel, I know that part of Washington. That's a fancy part of Washington, right? It's on right next to Connecticut Avenue, Rock Creek Parkway. The zoo and so on.
Of course, the crime rate around there gave me pause.
Fancy restaurants and all that. Now, if you go 2,000 feet, if you go almost a half mile around any place in Washington, sure, you're going to get into dangerous neighborhoods. But that the picking of that 2,000-foot radius, that seems to me completely unjustified.
Well, obviously, within the affidavit himself, Mr. Del Mar explained why he thought that was an appropriate analysis. And at least for purposes of summary judgment, we believe that...
But are you going to allow a jury to impose heavy expenses on a hotel because within two-fifths of a mile there's criminal activity going on?
Well, not on that basis alone, obviously, Judge. I mean, that would open up the floodgates.
Right.
What do you think the hotel should have done?
I think
provided with a guard to and from a room every day?
Well,
from the bar
not.
To a room?
No, but considering the fact that there was a liquor bar in the lounge, was open.
And she took full advantage of it, I take it.
Yeah, but, common sense tells us.
Common sense says if you're going to sit in a bar and get picked up and go someplace, you better be careful. Isn't she an iron worker of some sort?
Yes, she is. Yeah, she works for, she's a steel worker.
Steel worker.
Casket Company.
She's kind of a modern version of Rosie the Riveter, I assume.
Yeah.
She's actually a steel worker,
I'm not familiar. I'm not
steel
familiar
workers
with
how. In the shore? I don't know.
There was a
convention going on.
Yeah, convention.
Yeah. Steelworkers Union is a fairly powerful union. They have very good conventions. I recommend them to you, yeah. Judge Foster.
I thought she was an executive of some sort.
No, definitely.
Actually, a steelworker.
I'm not sure what the job classification was. She's a casket maker, and apparently that falls
a lot,
under the.
I'm sorry.
She fell in with a real bum, but I want to know, just as an act and everything, what you thought the hotel ought to do to keep her from having a rendezvous with somebody she meets in a hotel.
What our expert testified to there, with the bar closing at approximately 2 o'clock, and he opined the rape occurred at about 1:30, that should have been aware of that. The hotel security.
Wait! The hotel security should prevent people from leaving a bar together and going in elevators together, or what?
No, but because of the fact that violence can occur.
What's this guy an expert in? I mean.
Relationships
between single people, is that it? Or married people who are out of town on vacation? This guy's flying in the face of all reality.
Well, what concretely should the hotel have done to prevent this incident?
I believe that had a security camera been present, or had a security personnel been stationed there while the
security personnel like chaperones or something?
You have not chaperones.
Cops standing there when the bar closes in case they're a drunken hotel.
Well, an awful crimp in the social life of the people who are coming in, not just from Ecuador but from all over, including the Steelworkers Union.
What good would a security camera have done in the lobby next to the elevator?
Well,
because they see the initial incident, but that just was very brief before they go into the elevator. So what good would it do to have someone who was monitoring the cameras would have to call a security person who would have to rush over and.
Well,
if the security camera was able to discern that this was not a voluntary relationship, I mean, suppose two people are, mooching outside the elevator. You want to have a cop run up and say, "No, we don't permit this in our lobbies,"
Well, that is true.
Unhand that woman, you wretch! Yes.
Mr. Rector, is your best argument that having either some or increased security personnel in the lobby would have perhaps chilled the potential for the attack? Is that
would have been a deterrent? Yes.
You're not suggesting a camera in the elevator or a video of every elevator. I guess that's not what you're holding out as the standard here.
No, I'm not. The plaintiff is not advancing that as the requisites to meet.
Your argument is there just wasn't sufficient internal presence, which.
Looking at all the security factors, Judge.
Attacker.
Correct.
Let me ask you just. I'm puzzled by the rape in the elevator. If you go into an elevator and you don't press a button, then the elevator door opens again, right? So did they travel up? Did he press a button and they. Going up and down, or what happened?
Was the event in transit, I guess, is what you mean.
Right, exactly. Does he go in and press a floor, and so the elevator is going up, or were they just remaining on the ground floor, in which case the elevator door would open?
Not necessarily.
Doesn't it usually open
and close. Stops at a floor, opens and closes, and now you're sealed in there until somebody punches a button and move the elevator again.
Well, do you have any information on this?
I can't enlighten your honors on that.
That's not enough.
Yeah. Have to rely on our knowledge of elevators.
Want to save a little time for rebuttal?
We'll see what he has. And
okay, that's right.
Thank you.
Mr. Thornburg.
May it please the court, Mr. Recker. My name is Rob Thornburg, and I am here on behalf of the Omni Shoreham Hotel. I'll begin by answering a few of the court's questions. What happened on the elevator? In our summary judgment motion in the court below, we went essentially entirely with exactly what Ms. Shaddy said happened. And what she says happened was they got on the elevator, the assault took place. As the assault was going on, she saw that the button wasn't illuminated, the elevator didn't move. So she then hits the button to go from the lobby to the first floor. The elevator moves then from the lobby to the first floor. The doors open. She gets off the elevator. Alfredo Rodriguez stays on the elevator. She then calls her boyfriend from a cell phone in the hallway. And then moments later, our security guard, who's on routine patrol. I'm sorry.
Her boyfriend in the hotel, or she called some distance away?
Her boyfriend was back in Indiana. She called him.
She called him
on the cell phone. And as she was on the cell phone talking to her boyfriend back in Indiana, one of our security guards on a routine patrol walks down the first floor, hears her on the phone, you know, stops her and says, "Ma'am, be quiet. What happened?" And then the investigation ensued. To address a couple of the other issues.
Is she a steel worker, in fact, or what is she saying?
Yes, Your Honor. Ms. Shaddy is a member, and I forget the local number, but she is a member of the Steel Workers of America Union. She works for Batesville Casket, and in that capacity, she does a variety of jobs. She sews in liners to caskets, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, so she is a blue collar worker.
Yes, she is, Your Honor. The two questions that you ask of counsel is, what would the plaintiff have?
Was she particularly good? Is that why she gets to stay at the Shoreham Hotel?
What happened was she had started to become more active in her local union through, she was, I wouldn't say a new employee, but a newer employee, and she had started to become active in her local union, and through contacts locally and people that she worked with and knew at the factory in Batesville, they got her more involved in the union, and then she went with a young lady by the name of Desiree Moody out to this Steelworkers of America conference.
Oh, I see. This was a union.
Yeah, it was actually a union affair. They were having a gathering. It was a steel. Women Steelworkers of America, but it's a gathering.
And women Steelworkers? I thought it was just Steelworkers of America.
It was women. It was a specifically female Women Steelworkers of America. Two of the questions that you asked counsel is what would you have the Shoreham to do? And one of the things was to the counsel said with that the Shoreham should have had a security camera present. The problem with that is there's no evidence in the record that it would have done anything to either prevent this from occurring or that the absence of a camera, and this is really important, the absence of a camera makes this attack more foreseeable. Because plaintiff below and to this court tries to conflate the notion of preventability with foreseeability. In other words, if the hotel had done something different, this would have been preventable, but that's not the standard in D.C. But the bigger issue on the camera is plaintiff's own expert, Mr. Delmarva, which is interesting because his last name, Delmarva, is actually the nickname for the peninsula around D.C., but he actually said in his deposition when we took it, and it's in the supplemental appendix at pages 76 to 77, that cameras would not have prevented this assault. It would have, at best, allowed the hotel to respond to it after it already started.
Let's talk a little bit about the absence of a security person in the lobby. Now, it's very common, as you know, if you travel a little bit, that you seldom enter lobbies in major metropolitan areas without someone recognizable as a security person.
Yeah.
At least I don't want to take judicial notice, but I think that's common. Apparently, because someone became ill, so if I'm coming out of this bar scene or whatever, there isn't that, what has now become common, the presence of the, whether it's uniformed or just wearing a suit with whatever, You didn't have that person that day, did you?
We did, Your Honor.
He wasn't there.
He showed up for work, and he worked part of his shift, and then he became ill. This is a little misstatement I think I want to correct in the brief, but if you actually go to page 510 in the plaintiff's supplemental appendix, there's a suggestion in plaintiff's briefing that our security guard became ill and sneaked away. That's not true. What happened was the security guard became ill.
Went to sleep on a couch.
He went to leave, but because he used the metro station was closed, which is right across the street from the hotel. It's closed down, so he couldn't get the metro. So his buddies, the security guards, the security manager, and the other security guard knew he wasn't there. So then he goes, can't get on the metro to get home, so then he goes back and sleeps in a back room until the metro is running in the morning and he can go home. But the issue about the security guard being in the lobby is a little bit disingenuous, and I'll tell you why, because it's not a preventable analysis. It is a foreseeable analysis, and a heightened foreseeability is the standard. The security guard that would be in the lobby isn't actually stationed always in the lobby. The security guards at our hotel have specific tasks, because one of the things you don't want to do as a security person is stand in one place like a sentry. This is a fairly large hotel, so the gentleman
he may switch and go to other floors, and I'm not suggesting every floor at every minute have his. But is there not in most in your hotels at all times some security presence on the main lobby 24/7?
Depending upon how you define main lobby, the answer to that is yes. Let's call it the lobby level. The way the lobby is set up in our hotel, and this is in the supplemental appendix, it's got a diagram, but you've got sort of, let's say, a main rectangular room, and then in midpoint, actually somewhat like this podium, you have a hallway that shoots off that takes you to the east and west sides to the elevators. Where this occurred was on the west side leading to one of the elevators. The security guard let's assume there's a security guard in the lobby. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be stationed where they can see that, because part of their job is to move around. There's rooms that they have to check. They have to go outside to check for the valet area to make sure people aren't outside. They may go down two or three levels to Robert's restaurant, but there's a restaurant that they go down to make sure that's all locked up. So assuming that there's the security guard in the lobby doesn't necessarily mean that he would have been able to prevent this. But again, that's not the issue. The issue is, because the security guard got sick and went home, does it provide the hotel with a heightened foreseeability necessary under Washington, D.C. law? And the answer to that is no, because, number one, Ms. Shaddy spent at least an hour in the bar with this gentleman. She leaves the bar. They go sit out in the lobby together for at least an hour. At some point, she runs out of cigarettes, but she's not done with her beer, so she goes upstairs to her room, gets another pack of cigarettes, and returns back to the lobby with this gentleman. As she goes to the elevator, Mr. Rodriguez, who, as pointed out in the briefs, was there as part of the Guatemalan president's entourage, leaves the group right before she does. He goes around the corner and is talking on his cell phone. As she walks by, he says, "Hold on a minute." She does, and then we all know what happens after that. At no time when Ms. Shaddy was talking with Mr. Rodriguez did he do anything or say anything inappropriate or make any type of an advance. So the fact that there is a security guard who got sick and got home, I think, is a non-issue to this case because, number one, the two ways that you can show a heightened foreseeability is previous or prior criminal activity of the particular kind at the hotel.
Well, I think what you're saying is that there's no reason to think this particular guard, if he'd been healthy, would have been at this place in front of the elevator at the critical moment, right? He could have been anywhere.
Judge Posner, that's exactly right. Moreover, based on the facts as Ms. Shaddy again testified to, I'm not even sure that had our guard seen this assault, he would have stopped it.
Right. No,
But the real analysis is the hotel on notice? Is there some type of heightened foreseeability based on specific acts at the hotel or a combination of the other factors that the courts look at in D.C.? Well, we know there are no specific acts of any sexual assault like this by a hotel guest on another hotel guest in a common area. Understandably, then, plaintiff tries to rely on other factors to establish his case. Well, if you look at the cases that analyze this, your point earlier, Judge Posner, is well taken. The cases that talk about liability on premise owners, on hotels, on apartment buildings, are cases where an intruder has been able to get into the building and it's not supposed to be there, and because of an unlocked door, because of a broken lock, because of an elevator not working, the person can stay on the premises and create mischief. And that's not the situation that we have. The district court was correct in granting summary judgment for the Omnishore. Thank you.
Thanks, Sternberg. Right there.
Just briefly,
the two leading cases, D.C. cases, are Doe versus District of Columbia, District of Columbia v. Doe, and Doe versus Dominion Bank. They both factually involve rape by a third party on the plaintiff, and if those were stranger rapes, they were intruder rapes. However, I disagree with one statement that Mr. Thornburg made, that lapses in security are not a factor to be considered in assessing foreseeability. Clearly they are. In fact, the D.C. courts expressly state that is one of the factors.
But how do we know, if this sick fellow hadn't been there, how do we know he would have been standing in front of the elevators there?
How do we know he would have been standing?
I mean, in any hotel, even very fancy hotels, you are not likely actually to encounter a security officer while you're standing in front of an elevator, right?
This is true. Once again, relying on the many factors in assessing that, we would look to the fact that with alcohol consumption on the premise, with the marquee
around. Of course, every hotel has alcohol consumption on the premise, unless you're in Salt Lake City or something, right? So
that is true, Judge. But
that's why we avoid Salt Lake City so assiduously. I think we got your point anyway.
Well, thank you, Inspector, and thank you, Sternberg. Case is taken under advisement. Court will proceed to the 6th.